My wife rewrote my sermon and my and my PowerPoint tonight. So. For those of you who weren't aware, we on August 22nd we left for Australia. We spent 31 days there. Pastor and Lisa left with us on the 22nd, and a gentleman from our church picked us up in our church van. It's a good thing, because it turns out if you don't plan way in advance, when there's a eclipse the day before, you can't get a rental car. So that's how that worked out. So he picked us up, and that was a blessing. My mother, some of you have met my mother. She stayed with the four hoodlums for a month. And then some of you, I don't know how it all worked while I was gone, but some of them may have been down here at some point. So I'm sorry. This was when we arrived in Queensland. So when we showed up in Australia, we initially started in Queensland, in Brisbane. Our first flight out of Portland was down to LAX, and then we took a 747, one of the few 747 hops in the world today, still going on, from LAX to Brisbane. And not bad after 14 hours on one plane. Her, not me. One of our first interesting challenges when you go to a country that drives on the weird side of the road is they also drive on the weird side of the car. So we had more than one time where my wife attempted to drive and then realized she was on the wrong side. So that takes some getting used to when you spent your entire life getting in on the same side of the car. Okay, so I know it's a little bit small, but if you see, this is a map of Australia. So there are seven states. This is Western Australia, roughly 2.25 times the size of Alaska. So if you know anything about geography, that's very, very, very large for one state. This is Northern Territory here, if you can see these gray lines, for those of you who have better eyes than me. This is a very, very low density population. The lowest density of any state, definitely. Northern Territory is the only state that is owned by the federal government. So it doesn't have its own governor or any of that stuff like that. It's totally owned by the federal government. You have South Australia here, fairly large. Capital is Adelaide. And then you have here is a fairly large state as well. This is New South Wales right here. Of course, Sydney right here on the eastern coast. And then Canberra's also just south of Sydney here. That is the capital, Australian Capital Territory. So it's very, very similar to Washington, D.C. It's obviously owned by the federal government, but it's just a district, essentially. And then you have Victoria here. That is, you'll see these little yellow markers here. These little yellow markers are, this is Google Earth. I have markers in there, places that we were at. Well, that's horrible English. The places where we were. And then Tasmania is down here, a little island. And then the state where we spent the most time was Queensland, which is here, roughly 2.5 times the size of Texas. So, roughly 2.5 times the size of Texas and roughly 1/4 of the population. I believe, if I remember right, it's about 8 million people in Queensland, 4.5 million of which are in Brisbane alone. We spent, where these little yellow markers are, Brisbane's right here on the coast, and we spent a little bit of time up here in the outback. If you notice, this continent, for most of you who know Australia or anything about Australia, is that 70% of this continent is considered outback. Perth is over here. That's really the only major city at all in Western Australia. This entire piece here is outback. Essentially, general rule of thumb, if you're within 2 hours of the coast in Australia, you're in the outback. So anywhere, all the way around. There are times when it's closer than 2 hours to the coast. So it's very, very rough terrain once you get inside there. So this is kind of a zoom in. That's Queensland here. We started in Queensland. A little further, a little more zoom in. And then here you have Brisbane. This is a huge bay here. Brisbane's kind of just on the inside there, the western side of that bay. And this is, we went to a place called the Lone Pine Koala Sanctuary. The Marshalls, I'll show you a picture of them. They're a family that hosted us while we were there. When we showed up, I had been talking with them for the last couple of years via Facebook phone and email and everything. And they offered to host us while we were there, which was a huge blessing because of the cost of staying there in Australia for a month could have been a real problem. But they gladly took us in. When we showed up, of course, like I said, we'd talked to them on the phone. We'd never met them, obviously, in person. And then about a half an hour later, when Bob and Lisa showed up, I hadn't even talked to them before. So and they agreed to host all of us the entire time. So that was a blessing. They took us to this Lone Pine, and then on the way back to the city, they took us to this place. This is a top of a mountain called Mount Kuta. And it's just a viewpoint here, and we were able to get some pretty, pretty awesome shots. There's a ton more we overtook on pictures, I think, to say the least. This is at Lone Pine. This is the Marshall. So Brother Joe and his wife Melissa, and then their three kids. They're from Boston. They went to Crown College, is where they went to college in the United States. They've been they were in Darwin, up in the Northern Territory, which is almost dead center of the country, up in the very top, up in the jungle. They spent their first 12 years there, and then came back on furlough, and after a year of furlough, when they went back to Australia, they ended up in Brisbane there in Queensland. So they were a great host. They were fantastic. Lone Pine. A lot of animals there. There were not just koalas. There were kangaroos. This one, it wasn't actually a particularly hot day that day, but these guys were just laid out everywhere. But I'll tell you what, you get some kangaroo food, and all of a sudden you have a lot of friends. They were all over the place. We've got video of this time too, and all of a sudden one of them realized someone had kangaroo food, and they were flocking to us very quickly. They were kind of pushing each other out of the way even at times. These are lorikeets. We threw these in there. This is interesting. These birds are absolutely everywhere, unbelievably everywhere. And I was talking to Brother Jim Heverly, one of the other missionaries. He works there with the Marshalls. And they have a bird, little bird. It looks like a bird bath in their backyard. And they just fill it with seed. And these things come in here, and they dominate every other bird there. And they're like the size of a pigeon, probably big, smaller than a pigeon. They're not very big, but there's so much color. We were talking about, like, if you bagged a couple of those and brought them to the United States, you could make yourself a lot of money. And yet they're just like pigeons there. They're everywhere. And so they had them at Lone Pine. They had these little dishes where you could put little seed in there and hold it up, and they would be all over that thing. So Brother Joe was like a bird man all of a sudden. Kookaburras. I should have thrown the other pictures in. I went camping out in the outback with some of the guys, and we had pictures of, there's kookaburras all over the place. They were just hanging out in the tree waiting for us to drop some food or something like that. They are carnivorous, to say the least. I would say they're omnivorous. It doesn't matter what it is, they will eat it, and they will fight over it. And I have a video of them eating hot dog. They'll eat anything. Koalas are very docile. to say the least. They're stocky. They're pretty heavy. Weird feeling. Do we put the pictures in here of the? Yeah, I think we got pictures of us holding them too. That's right. This is still there. I don't know if you can see it down here. There's a little lizard here. They call it a, what's that?
Little lizard.
Yeah, it wasn't small. They call it a, what's it called? Is it water dragon? Okay, yeah. There wasn't any water around, but there was water dragons. they were, we got a picture. I actually touched one on the tail. They're very skittish, but I actually got a picture. Maybe Brother Joe had it on his phone. He took a picture. Okay, yeah. We got a picture of where I was able to touch it on the tail, and someone took a picture real quick, but they were very skittish. But I was afraid they were going to, I don't know. I didn't check his dental records to see if he could actually bite my finger off, but this is a place. There was like the way this place was is pretty cool. There's just tables. It's like a picnic area. Like if you go to any sort of zoo, they have like a big picnic area. There's tons of picnic tables. And they're in the middle, and all around the edges are these. There's just like low fences and koalas everywhere, and they're just putting in, you know, fresh eucalyptus branches for them at all times, and they're just all over the place. So we took a bunch of pictures in here. Oh yeah, so we decided to pay the extra. We figured we're in Australia, we might as well pay the $20 and hold the koala, you know. So my wife's went fairly smoothly. Mine, for some reason, he was out of hugs or something, and he didn't want to do it. She tried multiple times. I was up there for almost 10 minutes. Finally, she switched him out for one who's, had some fresh hugs, and he was fine, it looked like. Lisa was joined us as well. Pastor wanted to join in as well, so he got hugs from a slightly more dangerous koala. Speaking of which, most everybody wanted to hold Noah. And interestingly enough, he's probably been held by more people in his short lifespan than most of us in this room have ever been held in our life. He has been held by a lot of people. This couple, just as an interesting note, Matthew and Miranda, they had... They've been married about 10 years now, and they're at Brother Joe Marshall's church. It's New Beginnings Baptist Church. They're in Mango Hill, and just on the north side of Brisbane. They were pregnant, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I want to say, and it was, about 20, I think, I want to say 27 or 28 weeks, their baby was stillborn. And so they struggled with that. They're both Christians. They seem like very stable Christians as well. But apparently that really threw them for a while. While we were there, they announced that they are pregnant again, and they're very excited, and things are going much more smoothly than they did the first time. We've been really praying for them, so God is blessing them. They wanted to hold Noah as well. In fact, she's very sweet. He is very gruff. It's mostly an exterior. he had no problems holding Noah quite frequently, so it was very much interest. But you know, I guess that's Noah's life. You got to be held. By just about everybody. By the way, these are pictures of people, not Noah. But, you know, as you notice, yeah, everybody wants to hold Noah. Lydia is 11, I think. She's the Heberleys. They are the missionaries there. They're working in the Outback. They have a ministry called Australian Outback Ministries. Very close to what we're looking to do. I'll say more about that here in a minute. That's Jimmy, her older brother. I think he's 13 now. And Becky Heberly. And Jim waited his turn. He's like, I'll wait. I'm going to get my turn, though. We came over for dinner, and he's like, oh, I'm, as soon as the kids are done, I'm definitely taking my turn. So everybody's got a hold of Noah. So we were in Brisbane for the first 5 days, and then our initial plan had been to move down to Melbourne because Pastor and Lisa were not going to be there. They're only going to be there for 2 weeks. And so we wanted them to have an opportunity to see as much of the area that we were seeing. They didn't get a chance to see the outback, but we wanted them to see the Melbourne churches. So we all flew down then after 5 days in Brisbane down to Melbourne, and we visited some churches down there. This is a zoom in. Melbourne, of course, down in the southeast corner, kind of like what you would consider like Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, kind of if you were to transpose that on the United States. And Melbourne would be kind of like New Orleans location, essentially. Big, huge, huge, you can see it from there. It's a big, huge harbor, massive harbor. And Melbourne, the city is right inside, is on the very deep end of that, north end of that harbor. There was our pastor has some extended relatives that were here for their two of their daughters. Sherry is here, and Evie is here holding Noah, of course. And those two were here in July for about a month at our church and spent some time with us. So while it was kind of a weird situation that had happened, but since we knew them, we were going to be down in Melbourne, we said, well, where's your church? We'd like to come see your church when we're there. So we did. Their church is called Golden City Baptist Church. It's about an hour and a half drive north of Melbourne. And this is their family, their dad Peter and wife Leanne. And then these are all their children, except for this one here is a grandchild. The rest of them are theirs. They were a blessing to us, very much a blessing to us. In fact, they invited us to go to out to a national park. In fact, that might be next year. It's called Organ Pipes National Park. So we said, okay, yeah, we'll meet you guys there. We get there. When it's not your country, there's just limited things you can do. We have a small car. There was five of us, including Noah, and so our car was full. It was, how big was? Oh, it was essentially the size of a Malibu. It's a Holden Commodore, and so we had no extra space. And we find out, as we're pulling in, that one of their two cars was broken down, and they're an hour and 10 minutes from their house, and they're about 20 minutes out. So we're like, well, you need some help? What can we do? And they're like, oh, no, don't worry about it. They're catching a cab. Well, then like 10 minutes later, or maybe it was half an hour later, they showed up in a cab, and they were like, okay, we're ready to do the park. And we were like, well, I mean, that's kind of a big change there. And they were like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll just catch a train back to Bendigo, you know. And came time to leave. And, of course, there's limited number of adults. And some were going on the train. And there can only fit five in the car. And someone's got to drive it. And that was super complicated. And then they're like, well, you know, you guys just go ahead and take off back to your, you know, the place you're staying. And as we're getting ready to take off, it starts dumping hail. And we're like, they're standing out in the hail, and we're like, oh my goodness, we're just leaving you here. they had brought us lunch. They had brought us a picnic lunch and made us lunch, and they were fantastic. It was very much a blessing. This is a pretty cool place. Apparently, millions of years can do a lot of things to rocks. And according to the signs at this place, water over millions of years turned a lot of rocks into some weird looking things. So the Organ Pipes Park there, of course we know, can be done in a very, very short period of time. But it was pretty cool looking. It looked like big, massive, massive rock wall, the side of a cliff, and it was all looked like organ pipes all along. It was pretty cool. It was very interesting. This was also there. It was a kind of a sideways, weird looking sideways rock. This is a family. that Pastor and I had an opportunity to visit. We weren't going to be able to visit their church just because of timing. Brother Mark Pitts, he is a pastor there from, they're from Illinois. He oddly enough, went to Maranatha, where I didn't go to, but I have my degree from. So I didn't know them, but I had met them in an email, through email, and I had been talking to them through some mutual contacts, and called them and said, "Hey, I'd like to meet up with you and just get, you know, pick your brain." And they gladly agreed. We met at a coffee shop. This was an interesting place. This is a what was that place called? I can't even remember now. Okay, I was sitting here on this end. Pastor was sitting here right next to me, and these drinks right here are not coffee, because coffee is just not the same in Australia, heathens. And this was hot chocolate, but this is a special hot chocolate. Basically, I couldn't tell the chocolate; it was mostly sugar. But they hand it to you on a spoon. This little wooden paddle right here is basically a chunk of peanut butter dipped in chocolate, and that's your stir spoon. And so you stir it in there. They called it peanut butter hot chocolate, I think is what he called it. I don't know, man, by the time I was done, I was sweating. It wasn't the caffeine, I'll tell you that. That was an interesting place. I've never seen, and it's an entire place basically dedicated to sugar and peanut butter and hot chocolate, I guess. I don't know. That was crazy. But it was good. The kids would have loved it. they were very cool. They were they gave us a lot of helpful information. He's a pastor of a church called Grace Baptist Church there in central part of Melbourne area there. And they were a blessing to us in the short time we saw them. So Pastor and Lisa left from Melbourne 2 days before we did, headed back straight. They went to Sydney and then back to the States. And then this is 2 days later, we headed back to Brisbane to finish the rest of our trip out the last 2 weeks up in Brisbane area, up in Queensland. This is our flight back. This is the harbor. This is actually, I think, kind of looking on the south end of Gold Coast, just south of Brisbane, as we were flying north up there. This is the east coast Pacific Ocean there. Some pretty scenic beach, I'll tell you. My wife and I spent a day out in Gold Coast, pretty famous area of Queensland, and man, white sand beaches, and it was pretty phenomenal place. The Marshalls planned a bunch of different activities while we were there. They had a music night. I think our second night or third night we were there, all the musicians in their church came over, and everybody got a chance to pick a song out of the hymn book, and everybody played it. And their son plays the guitar very well, and I watched him very well and tried to pick out some strings that could possibly be normal. It wasn't good. But one of the nights they did have a men's activity. I think this was when we came back the second time. They had a men's activity and a ladies' activity. The ladies came over to the pastor's house, and all the men went over to the bowling alley. And I embarrassed myself on the bowling alley. I can pretty much embarrass myself anywhere. So this is Brisbane. Where are we at? Gold Coast. Okay, so here's Gold Coast. Here's Brisbane, kind of proper. Callanger is where the Marshalls live, and it's just on the north side, you know, 25 or 30 minutes north of Brisbane itself. And then for perspective, this here is Mergen. This is one of the churches. So Callanger's here, Mergen's here. That is the closest church of Brother Jim Heberly runs. He runs three Outback churches. This is the closest one. This one's about 2.5 hour drive north. And then Eidsvold, I can't read that. I think Eidsvold's further out. Yeah, this is Eidsvold here, straight up north. It's about 5 hour drive north. And then Tarum is his third church. We didn't actually go to this one, but it's further interior. It's about an 8 hour drive from Brisbane, so from Callanger. Eidsvold was an interesting town. Just interesting fact, Australia, about 35 or so percent of the population currently, of the current population, was not born in Australia. And that pretty much holds true all the time. The number fluctuates very, very little. So, oddly enough, because it's hard to get in that country. But much like the United States, I think if you... I don't know. I'll keep my opinions to myself. So there's a lot of population there that's not from Australia. That was not born in Australia. So Eidsvold obviously is not a traditional Australian name. It is Swedish, I believe. They said it's from Sweden. People settled there. This is a picture of us. One of the things I am interested in, obviously, because of our aircraft, I'd like to know where the airstrips are at. Well, one of the airstrips I picked out, he had told me that they had a church in Eidsvold a couple years ago, almost 3 years ago now. And so I immediately, first thing I did was went to Google Earth and looked to see if there was an airstrip there. Well, it turns out there was. And so after 3 years of staring at that on Google Earth, I said, well, we're stopping by the airstrip. So as soon as we pulled into town on Saturday afternoon, I was like, we got to go to the airstrip first. And he's like, all right, let's just drive up there. So we drove up there, and this is the airport. We laughingly noted that this is Terminal C. So if you're not sure where your baggage is, it's by, yeah, exactly. So it is a very, very, very nice airstrip. It's better than I had pictured from Google Earth. Our plan is to definitely be using it. It's in fact, the government maintains it because they have universal health care there, and the government has flying doctors that go around to different towns, and so because of that, they need to maintain these airstrips. So these airstrips are all over the place and well-maintained. This one has lights and everything, all automatic lights and everything, very, very, very well-maintained by the government, and free to use. So praise the Lord. So that's we're very much interested. Brother Jim Heberly is interested in flying as well. He's working. He had at one point been working towards getting his license. He kind of has not gotten much further than that recently, but hopefully eventually he will get his as well. And we're both very much interested in flying. So that was a big point of interest for us. This is a lady named Yvonne. She is her husband was. At one point, this is in Eidsvold, her husband was the chief of the tribe there. He passed away a couple years ago, and so she became the de facto head of the tribe. And she kind of rules that tribe. She's, in fact, that town, what we figured out, the town is like 500 people or something like that. It's under 500. But... She does what she wants there. She has a little electric cart with a little sun cover over the top, and she drives that thing wherever she wants. And we heard stories about her. She basically just walks into the mayor's office and tells him what to do, and he does it as she pleases. So she is a very interesting lady. She's a very sweet lady. She's interesting. She is kind of caught between. If you ask her if she believes the Bible, she will absolutely, unequivocally say yes. She believes that she is saved, and Brother Jim and Becky are not sure because she's still caught in that mystic world as well. So if you want to know anything about the Aborigine people, all you have to think about is the Native Americans. They are almost identical in every way, shape, and form. They were pushed by white people onto reservations, well, pushed around first and then eventually onto reservations, and then treated essentially the same way that the American government has treated Native Americans, and then they wind up with some of the similar, very, very much the same issues, heavy drinking and drugs and teen pregnancy and things like that, and they just don't know any different. They haven't seen much else. And it's, of course, not intended to stereotype. Not all Native Americans are that way, and not all Aborigine are that way, by any means. That said, that is very common. That is a very common thread. So she very much like the Native Americans, originally kind of believe in the, you know, the their spiritual reality comes from the earth and the sun and the, you know, this very mystic, and so she's kind of caught between that. She doesn't fully understand how to reconcile the two. So pray for her. She's claims to be saved, and you know, God knows that. So she was a very sweet lady. She in fact, did we put the other picture of her and you and I? Okay. She when she came up, she says, "We're getting a picture. Come now." And she grabbed my arm, and we had a picture. So this is the front. This is the front of the church building there, Idsville Baptist Church. This is owned by this whole property. It's a pretty good-sized property. There's a house, a little living quarters on it, and it's all fenced and everything. Not the fences matter there, but they rent this building and the entire property for free. So the guy that owns it is an older gentleman that lives in Sydney, and he's a Christian, and it used to be a Christian church that met there, but they never actually met there. And so then Brother Jim just said, "Hey, this building's here in this town." They were meeting in what's similar to like a Moose Lodge or something like that. It's a women's league thing, and they're in every little town there. And he says, "Can we meet here?" And the guy said, "Sure, why not?" So he lets them meet there anytime they want to. In fact, it's locked. This building here specifically is locked, and it's just theirs. And he never charges them anything for it. And so it's a fantastic little building. I think, I don't know if we put the pictures in the inside. I would say it's, the space is bigger. The auditorium at least is this size, at least. And then there's some little extra space there, but yeah, it's a fantastic area. So what happens is, what he usually does in Idsvold is he shows up on Saturday. So we stayed the night Saturday, but we showed up on Saturday afternoon, visited a couple people in town, and then we had a Bible study. So the men got together in the back of the main sanctuary, and we had a Bible study. He's going through a discipleship program with all these men together, and then it's Brother Jim here right on the end, and then. And then to his back, directly to his back, is another room kind of enclosed with glass, and the ladies met in there and had a Bible study. In fact, we had a bunch of kids show up, and he says, "Well, you know, I don't have anything for you today. You know, it's tomorrow, so be here tomorrow, you know, 10 o'clock. And they were all like, "Oh, okay." So they ended up hanging out most of the night, and Lydia ended up trying to kind of keep them entertained, and Mrs. Heberly, and Mrs. Heberly asked my wife to speak to the ladies that night, and actually we have a picture of that too. So it was a blessing. It was a blessing to us to just participate in the ministry that was Saturday, and then so that's Saturday evening, and then Sunday morning, we walk over there. The back is to the church building right there, and this is the building we stayed in. So it's 200 yards of that. And so it's all on the same property there. So Becky and Rebecca and Lydia taught the kids. There was probably at least 20 kids there that day on Sunday. Yeah, a lot of kids. It was a blessing. So yep, there you go. She decided we were taking a picture, so we took a picture. This is a gentleman here. We visited him on Saturday night when we showed up. Noel. What's his wife's name? Marilyn, something like that. Anyway, he was in the hospital. There's a little hospital there. He was in the hospital. We walked in there to visit him. He's sitting in a hospital bed, in the hospital, you know, gown and all that kind of stuff. And been in there for several months. He's been struggling with some, I believe, heart issues. He got saved recently, I think a couple months ago, and has never had a chance to get baptized yet because he's been in the hospital. So when we showed up, Brother Jim says, you wanted to come and say hi, you know, and see how you're doing. He's like, "Oh, I'm doing good." He's like, "In fact, I want to be at church tomorrow." And Brother Jim's like, "Well, hey, don't hurt yourself. You know, he's like, I would love to have you there." He's like, "But you know, I don't want you to hurt yourself." He's like, "No, I'll be there." And he's like, "Okay, what time are you getting out?" He says, "Oh, tomorrow morning, right before church." And he's like, "Oh, okay. Well, once again, don't hurt yourself, you know?" Come that morning, there he was. He and his wife showed up. He walked out of the hospital, walked straight down to the church, and came in for the service. So that was a blessing. It was encouragement to us. He's looking forward to getting baptized. In fact, I need to get with Brother Jim and see if that has happened yet. It's just coming into summer now, so they were going to be doing that. They've got two more ladies, too, that have been recently saved that would like to be baptized as well. A couple gentlemen. This guy here on the left, Frank, he owns a ranch. Several thousand head of cattle, at least 1,000 acres. And it's him and his horse. And he likes conversation. He doesn't get a lot of it, I think. So he was a very good guy. Just kind of hung around and waiting for someone to talk to. So it was very encouraging to have a chance to talk to him. And then next to him is a guy named Jono. They've been coming faithfully to the services. Anytime there's a service, they will be there. So Brother Phil here has been saved for a lot of years. His wife got saved recently, about a year, a little over a year ago. And recently he came to Brother Jim and asked if he could show him what he needed to do in order to eventually go down the process of becoming the pastor of this church. And Brother Jim says, "I will absolutely help you with whatever I can." That's the entire goal of a missionary, is to turn the work over to someone who's a native there. And Brother Phil is learning and growing, and a lot of questions, and just very eager. So he was a blessing to us. This lady here in the back talking to Brother Jim, both of these two ladies, they're the two ladies that just got saved recently. They're probably in their early mid-30s, probably, I would say. They both have kids, and they're both very just eager to grow, and just a blessing. Just a blessing. We convinced everybody that was left after the barbecue, good old-fashioned Baptist potluck and barbecue, and after everybody was done eating, they started to wander off. I tried to get everybody back together. I said, we got a picture if we can. We took a couple pictures, and then one of the ladies' dogs wandered through, and everybody's like, "Oh, grab the dog." So they grabbed the dog and got a picture with the dog, too, you know. That dog was, he almost got hit by a truck the day before because he likes to chase trucks. Dogs are not smart there either, so, you know. Wild dog. It was good church. So we were able to get a picture of all of us, my wife and I and Noah with the Heverleys as well. They were a big blessing to us. So church service was about 10. We finished about 11:30. Had a barbecue potluck, and then we left about 1 o'clock, 1:30, to drive about 2.5 hours to Mergen, which is where this church is. This is Mergen. This is a Bible Baptist church in Mergen, we showed up there about 3:30, 4 o'clock maybe, and immediately got ready everything for a service there. And then had a service with these folks, and then had another good old Baptist potluck afterwards. So, two potlucks in one day. It was brutal. These people know how to cook too. Boy, I was so full by the end of that day. And then there's another 2.5 hour drive home. Boy, that was rough. These people were such a blessing. These gentlemen, there's these three gentlemen and their wives, just. Heart for the ministry, and a heart to see people saved, and it's, you figure you go across the world, especially in a little tiny town of a few hundred people, and you're not going to find that, but you do. They're there, and it's a blessing. They encouraged us. In fact, this gentleman here in the back, he's a real joker. He came to me. He said before he was getting ready to leave, he says, "So when are you planning on being back?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's not a short plan here, but we're hoping 2 years to be done with the aircraft maintenance program, and then whatever deputation takes. It could be, you know, 6 months. It could be 4 years. I don't know." And his comment to me was, "Well, you have to promise me you'll come back here before I die." And I said, "Well, I can't promise you anything, but of course, Lord willing, we our goal is to get back here sooner than later." And he then joked. He coughs a little, and he says, "You know, I'm not feeling so good." And I told him, I said, you can't do that. You have to hold up your end of the bargain. You have to try to keep yourself alive for me to get a chance to come back." So he was a real joker. They were a blessing to us. This is Gold Coast. Noah was not as thrilled at the windy beaches as we were. Like I said, it's just coming into summer. It's actually kind of spring there right now. So it's a little chilly. It was probably, 70, 72. It usually gets up into the upper 90s. So the beach goers were very, very sparse there. And yet this is warmer. This was significantly warmer and significantly less windy than the warmest and least windy time on the Oregon coast. So it was amazing to us. It was fantastic. Gold Coast was unbelievable. So this was on our way back from Gold Coast. There were some awesome pictures we were trying to take, and we're not the best photographers, so my wife took that one. About out of time. Does anybody have any questions based on what I talked about, or based on just what you know of our ministry, or more information on our ministry plans?
The lady, the boss lady.
Yeah, Yvonne.
She looked rather short. Is that normal? Those people from that area, are they short?
She was very short, yes. I don't know that they're shorter than, the males that I saw were around the same height as me, and maybe a little bit taller. They weren't super short. No, I would not compare them like with Asian cultures. They were, I would say, probably average in America. That would be my guess.
Here,
yeah.
So in Idsville. Do they have any other kind of churches like Catholic or Presbyterian, anything else that's there? And hold on while I interpret the question for the governor.
Fill that up again. No. there is a lot of the small towns have an Anglican church. Which is basically just a slightly modified Catholic, not much different. Anglican is essentially Catholic. They do not do anything in them. They don't. They're not in the Catholic. They're not in those churches ever. Pretty much, they're more of a club than they are a church at all. They don't hold services. Nobody preaches in the Outback. Not even Baptists. Nobody goes there. In fact, Brother Jim said in his 14 years he's been in Australia, he knows of not a single other person, individual, anybody of any religion preaching in the Outback. He's never seen anybody else. He's never come across them. He's never heard of them. Nobody. So it's just him, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. He has some pretty vast experience moving around different parts down in the south, parts of the Outback as well, down towards Sydney, and he's never run into anybody else that's even really interested. The Baptist churches that we were in, especially down in Melbourne, they mentioned to us that they were very interested in supporting or working somehow with us in our future goals. Churches are interested in helping. Nobody's doing it themselves because it's hard. It's a little harder to live out, to go out there and that kind of stuff. So so everybody's aware, our goal, the point of the aircraft is to limit these distances. He drives these long distances to get to these churches. So it takes a lot out of you. It limits how often he can get to them, and that. And so the goal is to use the aircraft to be able to get there more often. And of course, eventually that probably means more places to and further. That's kind of the goal. It's a slightly faster version of a car. So, anybody else?
Just the average small town out in the Outback there, is it comprised of natives and European-type people mixture, or is it mostly diverse?
Yeah. So Queensland, as a whole, is 4% Aboriginal. Northern Territory as a whole is almost just under 30% Aboriginal. So Northern Territory, much more likely to find a town with mostly Aboriginal people in it. Certainly not many that are just Aboriginal, but the two towns that we were in, Idsvold and Murgan, the church at Murgan has no Aboriginal people in it. In fact, from what I gathered, there were no Aboriginal, not, or at least very few Aboriginal people in that town at all, in that area. In Idsvold, almost the entire town was, it was majority Aboriginal. The church is not representative of that. There were more children, and there was a few of the ladies that were Aboriginal. No Aboriginal men were in there that we met. There's a significant population of Aboriginal in that town, though. But it was mostly white people in that church, and then a lot of the kids were Aboriginal. But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's not actually a significant population in Australia, and certainly not in Queensland. Oh yeah, it's not like here. At the very least, they will be congenial. At the very least, I never heard anybody that was rude whatsoever. I mean, even in the city, very few people that we ran into would ever be rude to your face, at least. When you knock on someone's door, they would just be polite and say, I'm not interested. They're very live and let live is very much their motto, and they're good with that. And as long as you don't get angry with them, they're not going to get angry with you. They're fine with you handing it to them, and they'll take it and probably toss it in the garbage. But some of them will listen, obviously. Sheer numbers means that someone will listen if you get enough of them out. So that's the goal. But not rude at all. I don't think the entire time there I saw an Australian that was rude to me. I don't remember one anywhere. So. Yeah. 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 I don't know if it's the water or food. Do you feel that at all being changed from coming from here over there? Or?
No, I didn't at all. I didn't notice that. It's a different diet, and I was a little concerned just that they eat slightly different things. I didn't include all the food in this because the last one I did at our church, I had included way too much stuff and I didn't have enough time. So, they're really big on meat pies. I don't get it. It's the thing, and it's British. And are they big on those in Canada or at all? Yeah. Okay. So in Australia, they're like, "Have you had a meat pie?" And we were like, "What's a meat pie?" And they were like, you know, they're explaining it. I'm like, "Oh, like a pot pie?" They're like, "No, it doesn't have vegetables in it." I'm like, "Oh, okay, so a pot pie with no vegetables." And they were like, "No, it's a meat pie." I'm like, "Okay, whatever. It's meat, some sort of meat with gravy. Not that complicated. And to be honest, not that interesting. Very bland. I don't like bland food, so I got turned off pretty quickly. I ended up having, when we were down in Melbourne, Brother Gunter gave me we went to this little meat pie shop, of all the things, and they had, I could have included those pictures. They in the top of the meat pie, in the crust, they bake, there's a little logo of what type of animal is in there, you know, and they've got all these wild game ones, right? They've got the crocodile and the camel and all these things. So I'm like, well, I'm here. I might as well try a crocodile one, right? So, I mean, it can't be that bad. I mean, it's just another animal, right? What I didn't know was that they were going to sit around, and by the time I got it, they had already drinking all their coffee and were sitting there staring at me, waiting for me to eat it, and watched me eat every single bite of it. As much as I enjoy people staring at me while I eat, that was not... Yeah, anyway, so it was not interesting, to be honest. You wouldn't have noticed if I didn't tell you that it was crocodile. You might have thought that the chicken was a little rubbery. That's pretty much it. And I mean, not even like oyster or squid or octopus kind of rubbery. Just not even, I mean, you would have just thought someone overcooked the chicken or something. That it really wasn't that different. So to me, I didn't try the camel. I wasn't sure what camel tastes like, and I'm sure it's just some other form of chicken. So, that's their big thing. They love those. They don't have coffee, like Coffee Mate, like liquid creamer. We found that out when we got there. That was one of the things they mentioned, the marshals mentioned to us, and it took us a while to comprehend that. Like, what's wrong with these people, you know? They just don't have it. And I tried to prove them wrong, and they weren't wrong. They don't have that stuff there. Now, when we were there, Pastor was asked to preach when we were down in Calvary Baptist Church in Melbourne area. And we were there on Sunday morning, and then when we got there on Sunday night, the pastor mentioned, we got there, and I was talking to somebody, and then I went over and found Pastor talking to Pastor Mallory. And Pastor Mallory, I walked up, and Pastor Mallory says, "Hey, did you get the coffee?" And it was, you know, Sunday afternoon, right before the service. And I said, "Is there coffee? I hadn't had coffee today." And he goes, "No, there's coffee in there with coffee creamer." And I was like, I'm picturing the powder and stuff, you know, it's fine, whatever. And he's like, no, like real coffee creamer. And it turns out that he had gone to the United States a couple years ago, and someone had given him some real coffee creamer, and he's hooked. And he figured out a way to get a bottle of it. And it was very good. So, just different. I took one of the pictures I posted on Facebook was the coffee whitener. I don't know why you need your coffee to be whiter, but they offer that. They don't have coffee creamer to say. So, yeah.
When you were in high school,
Yeah, there were some men there. The Aboriginal people were all women and children. There were no Aboriginal men. There were some white men there. We didn't have a lot of time to spend with them, but I would say that the most I talked to anybody was with Brother Phil Highland, the older gentleman, and he and I actually had quite a long discussion about the broader concept of what many refer to as angelology, what the Bible refers to as the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament, and the concept of that and what that was, and I just gave him my thoughts as I understood the Bible. That was the deepest conversation I had with them there. He was just attempting to kind of get a better picture in his mind of what the Bible's saying. I think the key to the other people there, his questions were more geared towards he's going to be probably a pastor eventually. Everybody else there, it was much more on a limited knowledge of the Bible kind of basis. So wouldn't have been very deep questions. They're more practical, everyday answers was more where they were kind of headed. And newly saved, so just trying to kind of figure out the basics of the scriptures.
And Gene had a question. He was asking, did they have soda pop there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have Fanta. They had, in fact, Brother Jim, the Heberleys invited us over for dinner, and they could have asked me, but they didn't ask us what we like to drink, and so we showed up and there's a couple of bottles of soda sitting there. And, you know, it's you're hosting somebody, you want to have some different kinds of things to drink. Tea is very, very much a big deal there. Tea is, like, it's a big deal. Like, if you don't drink tea, something's wrong with you. So they immediately realized how wrong I was because I don't drink tea. He decided to make sure they had a couple bottles of soda. Well, somehow it came out. My wife says, oh, yeah, it's kind of funny because we don't drink much soda. And he goes, we never drink soda. We went and bought these bottles just in case, you know, you guys wanted soda. So I was like, well, I'll have, you know, have a glass of soda since you bought them. But it's not super common. Like, I mean, yes, it's everywhere, but not everybody drinks it. It's nowhere near as common as tea. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
For comparison purposes, general aviation is the term used for non-commercial aviation, essentially. So small aircraft. In the United States, there's approximately 150,000 small general aviation aircraft. 150,000. In Australia, there's about 13,000. So, not much less comparatively. Like when you compare other countries in the world, they're probably in the top five, but nothing like the United States. So the availability of aircraft in Australia is just not the same as it is here. Besides the fact that most common general aviation aircraft are built in the United States. So they've got to get there somehow. So just significantly limited. As a general rule in most things, Australia is about 20 years behind the United States in a lot of things. They're following 20 to 30 years, something like that. They're following the United States in a lot of different things. There's a lot of different ways I could describe that in little ways, but They're essentially, so I would assume that probably eventually over the years there will be more aircraft there. The limited availability of aircraft limits the opportunity to lease. Besides, in United States, it's very much the same way in Australia as it is in the United States. When you lease, you take over every aspect of that airplane. So you pay to lease the aircraft, but you also pay for everything else, like the maintenance of it, all the 100-hour maintenances, all the annuals, all that stuff, which are the vast majority of the cost. In fact, the general rule they say is about $10,000 per engine per year. So if you're going to pay for all that, you might as well own the aircraft rather than pay. I mean, so the positive would be in leasing is that you wouldn't have to pay it all at once. But the negative is that in the end, you don't get it either. So like if you did own it for the same aircraft for 20 years, owning it versus leasing it, 20 years later, you still don't own it. 20 years later, you do own it. Unless you were able to just buy it all out at once. So the other side to that, I talked to a few people about it, is it would require a higher monthly dollar amount that we would have to raise, as opposed to collecting a certain dollar amount and then paying for the aircraft and then that part's done. So it's kind of, from what I'm gathering at this point, it's kind of frowned upon by most people in the industry, unless you're a school and you're essentially, that's the way they make up the money, and you have your own A&P certified mechanic who's doing the work on it. So that's what I gathered. People kind of tend to lean away from it. So cost of fuel for what?
For the
airplane?
Yes.
No. It's not much different than the difference in cost for car fuel, auto fuel. One of the things that is interesting they were kind of blown away. Like, so the missionaries, you know, they spent years on the field, so they don't really, even when they come back on furlough, they get 1 year, and it's a whirlwind. They're just trying to get to churches as fast as they can, and so they don't really pick up what we understand here in the United States as the norms. They were asking, hey, it's a big thing right now to get 10%, like, all fuel stations are now required to offer 10% ethanol fuel. Ethanol, it's just a big deal there. Well, they were asking me, 10% ethanol fuel, they were saying, is that difficult to, do they sell a lot of that there? And I said, no, you're asking the wrong question. Do they sell anything that does not have 10% ethanol in it, at least? And he was blown away by that. Like, everybody has that, and that's the difference there. They still, it's just becoming very new to them. So when I say that they're 10 to 20 or 30 years behind us, that's one of the aspects that kind of explains that. They're just kind of getting into that. That doesn't affect at all. That affects cars. It does not affect airplanes at all because it's diesel. You're talking about aircraft fuel. So it's exact same aircraft fuel all around the world. So it really doesn't affect the price too much. Yeah? No, actually, it's very similar to Oregon. The difference is that there's an exchange rate of about 30%, somewhere between a third and a quarter and a third. And so the prices of everything is a quarter to a third higher. But it breaks back even when it's about a quarter of the exchange rate. So say $10 for something, here it's like $7.50. Because with the exchange rate, it's $7.50. So it's it's very, very similar. We've done, so there's some pretty cool cost comparison tools on the internet. And they seemed to come in pretty square with what we found when we were on the ground there. So it's very similar to Oregon. I think very different than in Alabama or Arkansas maybe, but very much the same as here. It is dollars. It's Australian dollars. Yep. So yeah, yes, you do have to change the money. It's like I said, it's usually right around about 70% exchange rate. So.
What is the currency?
Is it a pound? No, Australian dollar.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Australian dollar. Yep. No. Nope. Yep. It's Australian dollar. Any other questions? Maybe.
Oh, they're just talking about.
Oh, okay.
Because Miriam travels around the world, and so they're just discussing about you can see in the airports, mm-hmm. different places, you can see how much dollars equal, how much for that country, their money, euro or Australian dollar, Canada money. Whatever.
Yeah, it's not tied to the euro in any way. So, I think Cameron had, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That to me is really, really important, because that's supposed to be like the head of the household. If you're not converting them, it might not make as much of a lasting impact on our culture. And I was also going to ask, where were they instead of being there?
Yeah, we had an interesting experience. So Saturday night when we showed up, we did our Bible study. And then when we were done, that lady Yvonne had come, but she'd had to go. She's like, I've got to leave at 7 o'clock, right at 7 o'clock, and I've got to. They had a party, birthday party for somebody's 50th birthday. I don't know who, I cousin or nephew or somebody, and it was just down at the little park down the street. And so she leaves, of course, and we're all done and we're cleaning up, and there's a cell phone sitting there, and everybody's like, whose is this? Eventually, Becky says, I'm pretty sure that's Yvonne's. Well, we can hear the dance party going on down at the little thing, and we're like kind of looking at each other, and she's like, should we take it to her? And we're all like, I don't know if I want to go down there. Well, we decided, okay, we'll do it. So we locked everything up. I'm carrying Noah, and we start to walk down there, and we just get down the road, and she comes driving up in her little cart. Don't lock it up yet. Don't lock it up. My phone's in there. And we're like, actually, we were just coming down to bring it to you. She goes, oh, yeah, great idea. Come on down. So we were like, okay, I guess we're going down there. So we go down there, and they're having this birthday party, very liquefied birthday party. There's a live band playing, and very, very, very loudly. And I mean, you could hear it across the entire town. I mean, it's not real big, but you could hear it all over the place. So she wants us to drag us in there, and of course, we get inside this little building, and she grabs my wife's arm. She gets out of her cart, and so one thing you have to understand about this lady, she gets up off her cart. If you aren't holding her up when she grabs your arm, it's going to be you that's responsible for her being on the ground. So you've got to hold her up, right? She's not stable. So she grabs my wife's arm and drags her up to the front of the stage. She's going to say, says something about having them play some different song. Everybody's standing around, the entire room is standing around with a beer in their hand. And it was very loud, very awkward. The rest of us are all just standing by the cart like, okay, let's go. She drags my wife up down. I've got pictures. And she's standing in, I mean, like, literally this far from the guy singing, waiting. He had just started a song, so they stood here this close and waited while he finished his song very loudly. She went off and telling him to do something. We thought our impression was that she was going to have him sing a Christian song of some sort, was what we were hearing her say. That's not what happened. It was some sort of Waylon Jennings or something, I don't know. And it didn't get better from there. And so that's where all the men were. None of them came over to our thing because that's where they were all at. They had a mechanical bowl there. Now, I say all that to say, I agree with your assessment. That said, a door can be entered anywhere in a family. You take the opportunity. Satan will take the opportunity anywhere. So if you give Satan the opportunity in your four-year-old son, he will take that opportunity, and he will get his, he'll nudge his way into your family. And when I say that, you know, whether that's at his school, teaching him how it's okay to be whatever gender you decide to be, or he will take that opportunity. He will get into your family in some way. In much the same way, not to relegate God to Satan's practices, but God came first, and God will use anything to get into a family as well. And so I think that my personal opinion is, if you have an opportunity to get into a household through a kid, then you take that opportunity. And I've known people that have said, I can't believe you give kids candy just to get them to come to church. Hey, if it gets them to church and they get saved and hear the gospel, I will give them bags of candy. I don't care about their teeth, I care about their soul. So if you see an opportunity, you get in. And so I think that's what Brother Jim has tried to do, is try to get in that way. And it's harder, because I think if you get in with the dad first, he could run the home. That said, in the United States, and I feel like it's very common there as well, many times it's not the dad that runs the home. And it's the dad's fault, but it's what he has allowed, or the husband, however you want to say it. So very commonly among the Aborigine, from what we understood, it seems that the women are very dominant in that culture anyways. So it may be more beneficial to get to the ladies first. Anyway, I don't know that for sure. Didn't have a lot of experience with it. But I would just say the end result to that would be I would take whatever door I can get in and see if I can witness to the family. My personal family story was, my dad was saved because my mom got saved, and she told the pastor to come talk to my dad. And he pestered my dad until he finally listened. And that's the only reason I grew up in a Christian home. So I do think you take whatever opportunity you can get. And I do think that you end up having to take opportunities like the women and children, just because those are the ones that will listen. So, but I would say the culture is not much different than here in the United States. It's surprisingly similar. there were not a lot of differences. Any other thoughts or questions? Any other questions maybe about the aircraft that maybe are unclear about? Or the airplane and its ministry? Just for reference, if you're interested in aircraft or you're interested in writing it down and going looking at aircraft, the aircraft we're looking to get is called a Cessna 206. It is a six-seater, very common around the world, and it's a little bit bigger aircraft, single engine, so a little cheaper to maintain, a little bigger engine, but I think quite serviceable, very, very long history of durability and reliability and things like that. So,
is that a prop or is that
it is, yep. It's a turboprop. So it's very common, fairly easy to find. Price range is, we've seen early 90s in decent shape for a little under 200. 2007 we were looking at was about 350. So that's about probably the range we're looking at, somewhere between 200 and 350. It's surprisingly different in the aircraft world that you'd never drive a car from the 70s, but an aircraft from the 70s is just not the same. They have significantly different records requirements and maintenance requirements. It's just a little different. That said, there's a limit to everything, and I'm not sure that I want to fly one from the 70s, but that's why I'm getting my maintenance certificate, so I can maintain it. it's got a pretty decent range, and overall statistics make it I think probably the aircraft we're looking at. So yeah. My pastor wants us to purchase it there. We only saw when we looked at the. So if you know anything about autotrader.com, there's RV Trader, there's Trader just about everything, Motorcycle Trader, there's Airplane Trader too. And they have a similar version of that in Australia. And we only saw three on there, and they were all from the 80s. So when you're looking at 13,000 aircraft, general aviation aircraft versus 150,000, your market is significantly bigger in the United States. That said, I don't want to fly 8,000 miles in a small airplane. So I would probably, here's my looking ahead without actually knowing how it's going to turn out. My guess is what's going to happen is we're going to end up purchasing in the United States and then paying someone to ferry it. And you can do that for what to me is relatively inexpensive. So. That's a likelihood. God can work out anything, obviously, and it would be much better to just buy it there. But, yeah. Any last thoughts? We put some things. We have not completely put our deputation table together yet. We have some of the majority of the pieces. So I put them kind of together back there a little bit. There's a didgeridoo. I wanted to buy a big one. I had several issues with that. I didn't have a bag that would fit it. they're like this tall. I also didn't have a wallet that would fit it, as they're like $300. So I was trying to limit that. So I bought a small one. It's back there. It's got a wrapping over it. So if don't blow on it. It's wax. I just don't want everybody to get sick or anything. But it's got a wax mouthpiece on it. And to be honest, I really don't know how to use it. Someone told me how to, and I haven't figured that out yet. So there's some boomerangs back there. I think one or two of them is a returning boomerang. We bought one, just a novelty item boomerang for our pastor. And he mentioned it from the pulpit. He said, I wanted to thank the cooks for bringing me a boomerang. He says, what's interesting is I didn't realize that they knew that since I was a little kid, I've always wanted a boomerang. And I said, I didn't know that, but I thought it would be unique, And he said, so he's interested in seeing how it works. And I said, well, he says, does it fly? And he's saying this from the pulpit, of course. And my initial response is no. And then I corrected myself. I said, it does fly. It just doesn't return. So if you have the power to throw it, it will go. It just doesn't return. Some of them don't return. They're just not weighted that way. But there's, I think one of them back there is a returning one, so be careful. There's a couple of picture books that we bought that are we thought would be pretty interesting to look at there. So, and there's a kangaroo skin back there too. That is a real kangaroo skin. What's left of that kangaroo? So, yeah. If you have any questions, you can feel free to ask me later. In closing, I know we're really, really over what you guys usually do here, but I just want to encourage you with one thing. If many times we know what God is asking of us, or we have an idea what God is asking of us, we have you can call it a calling. Maybe it's not mission field. Maybe it's something smaller. Maybe it's on a daily basis. Maybe God's calling you to go regularly outdoor knocking or witnessing. Whatever that is. Maybe God's calling you to disciple somebody. Whatever that calling is, it doesn't have to be a missionary overseas in a different country. Whatever that is, the one thing that, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, take for what it's worth, that holds us back from that more than anything else is fear. Fear of the unknown, fear of what God will do, knowing that there were men in Hebrews chapter 11 that trusted God and went through some pretty disastrous experiences, we would say. And that creates fear in us. We fear to do what God has asked us to do because we don't want that experience. If you've ever read Fox's Book of Martyrs, those were people who trusted God and died for their faith in brutal ways. To be honest, I'm not afraid of being dead. I'm afraid of the process, right? So we fear. Don't let fear keep you from doing what God wants you to do. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean that getting over that fear is just, well, I've decided to do it, and that's it. I'm going to do it from now on. It may be a daily, in fact, I would argue it will be a daily process, whatever that is. But don't let fear hold you back, whether that is the mission field, in a foreign place you know nothing about, like we knew nothing about a few years ago. It may be a foreign block down the street. I don't know. But whatever that is, don't let Satan convince you that that fear is worth keeping you from doing it. Because what you should fear, the Bible says, what Jesus Christ said, is fear the one who can't do anything to you except to your body. He can't touch your soul. Fear the one that can actually touch your soul. So he can affect and does affect blessing and cursing on us every day. We breathe because he lets us. Fear that one. And not doing what he's called you to do. And I am 100% convinced that those people in the book, Fox's Book of Martyrs, those people in Hebrews 11, did not look back and say, I wish I hadn't done God's will. I guarantee it. So don't fear the things that the devil wants you to fear. Fear not doing what God wants you to do. I'm going to close in prayer. I'll finish my part in... No, go ahead.
All right.